Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, July the 18th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of stories to get into today. I mean, some really interesting ones, too. Recruiting in the military is down. President Biden was in the Middle East. Iran is talking nuclear weapons. That's not good. So a lot to get into. A lot to get into. The trip to the Middle East was obviously controversial. Dr. Birx, you remember Dr. Birx from the COVID meetings? She's back in the news, but I'm not sure that people want to hear what she has to say about all of that. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, it's 104 in Dallas, Texas, so I'll leave it at that. How is that for global warming?
That's incredible global warming. Now, we have just finished here in White Plains, New York, a severe thunderstorm. I mean, really, it was a big one. We usually get false forecasts. You know, we get a Jackie Mason comes on the air and said, there will be the worst storm you ever saw in your life. There will be nothing like it. And then you get one drop. Today, they were right. It was a very severe storm. A lot of thunder, a lot of lightning. Al Gore ran by in a sandwich sign. It was all coming off. And he said, just get inside, forget the warming stuff. So today they were right, very severe storm. It's always interesting, though, to have a little heavy weather because it reminds us that nature is much larger than we are. That's
right.
For sure.
Well, we could use a lot of rain down here, actually. I would love to have a rainstorm down here. I think it might cool things off, and if anything, the farmers – or the ranchers would love to have a little bit of rain. I couldn't help but remember, I was reading last week that somebody was complaining about television, local television in New York, saying that it's all about the weather. No, it's like you turn on the local news, and within 2 seconds, the weatherman is on. So would you say that's true?
Well, yes. There's a lot of emphasis on weather reporting because it's very lucrative for the television stations. I mean, they, you know, especially if bad weather is expected, they get a lot more hits, you know, or people turning on the TV, and they know that, and they can bill accordingly. The stations can bill accordingly. But yes, weather reporting is a big deal for television, and they usually do it pretty well. They usually do it pretty well when the actual event is occurring. As far as predicting the event, there I think we have some problems, but I know that whatever they do is very good for Everready and the Energizer Bunny. There are a lot of Energizer Bunnies running around with batteries, but occasionally we'll get it. Other than that, if there's a big story in New York, and there usually is the further deterioration of the city. And the
right.
fear that that there are an increasing number of cases of COVID-19 and the fear that they will start closing things again. The city
Ooh.
Is really not really recovered from the last one. And I don't know if we can take another shutdown without losing a lot more businesses.
Yes, I agree with you. There's some talk about COVID everywhere, or at least the 22 version of COVID. Let me begin. I mentioned there are some interesting stories this week and lots of things to get into. So let me just start with one that I found very fascinating. And that is the U.S. military is having problem recruiting young men and women to serve in the military. And of course, that's extremely important when you have a volunteer army. It wouldn't be an issue if you have a draft army because you don't have a choice. You go to jail or you show up to register. But in this case, we have a volunteer army that has been around since, well, since President Nixon. I think it's done the country well. Yes, I would say that the volunteer army has done quite well. We have, you know, fought a few wars, and they've done quite well. And, you know, all of these guys are volunteers who are risking their lives, especially to fight terrorism, so you have to honor them and salute them. But we cannot have a volunteer army without volunteers. And people were talking, Bill, that there are many reasons why recruiting is down. But one of the reasons is people just, you know, they hear so many, you know, the army is apparently woke, and you go in there and you're being told that this is a racist country that you're going to be fighting for. I mean, it's a totally different atmosphere. I go back to how we felt after 9/11 or after Iraq and how young men were volunteering to go fight. Well, I don't think that spirit is here today, Bill.
No, and among the young men volunteering to fight, we should point out, were many minority young men who volunteered to fight. This is something that started during the Obama administration. He had, I think people are now saying it openly, it was an openly racialist administration. A lot of left-wingers, as are in the Biden administration. You don't look at the top level. You don't look at the cabinet offices. You look at the sub-cabinet offices, the assistant secretaries. And we were warned months ago by conservative commentators that an awful lot of very strange people were being assigned to very sensitive positions, especially in the Department of State and in the Department of Defense. The generals that we have now, the flag and general officers, most of them were created under the Obama administration, made generals, and they either accept or just don't want to complain about this new mentality that the main job of the military is to be woke. We've also heard many reports recently. I'll be running some of this at Urgent Agenda about some of our great national historic sites being turned into propaganda outlets for the Marxist left, especially Monticello, the home of Thomas Jefferson, which I visited several times. Because I had a relative in Charlottesville, and now over the weekend, Montpelier, the home of James Madison, which has been turned into nothing more than a propaganda center for critical race theory. We hear about billionaires devoting their money to this, buying this kind of thing. I don't know what's going through their minds, but people have come to these places and have been shocked at what they have heard, that apparently on the Jefferson side, you hear very little about the Declaration of Independence or Jefferson's founding of the University of Virginia, but all about slavery, 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 slavery. There was a gentleman who visited Montpelier, which is, as I said, the home of James Madison, who wrote the Constitution. The people are just appalled by what they're being told. As you said, we're a rotten country. Most of our early presidents were all slaveholders. We were formed in slavery. And there was one wonderful little segment of the story that I read about an African-American who was visiting, and someone came up to him and said, you know, he was the only African-American there apparently as a visitor, and someone asked him why he came to Montpelier. And he said, I'm the great-grandchild of one of James Madison's slaves. And that, of course, is a wake-up. And they said, well, what do you think about all this emphasis on slavery? You must be pleased by it. He said, no, I'm not. He said, you know, as someone who has slavery in my family, he said this. He said, there were hundreds of thousands of slaveholders in America, but there were not hundreds of thousands of men who wrote the Bill of Rights. And right. What a wonderful thing to say, to recognize that Madison, yes, he was a slaveholder, most of them were, but that they also did great things that led eventually to the end of slavery and to the establishment of this democracy. And here was a black man speaking, and I wish that a lot of other people could hear his wisdom.
Right. No, that was absolutely great. But I have not been to Monticello or to any of those places in a while. Mount Vernon too is the other one that might come on this woke stuff. But I'm a little surprised. You know, I thought these things were run by people who we're interested in promoting the legacy of these men. I mean, it sounds to me like the college professors are running these places, Bill.
Oh, it's they're being run actually by very wealthy people. That has been pointed out in several stories that I've read recently. I mean, how can you get these changes so quickly? They're mm-hmm. bought. People right. are buying their way onto boards of directors. There are organizations, including, I believe, some federal agencies that are historic trusts, and they regulate or run or administer some of the historic trusts. And they talked about the inordinate number of extremely wealthy people on these boards who apparently have lost touch with reality. They think they're doing something wonderful. They're giving back. They're giving back by putting these crazy tour guides in now. The articles I've read about Monticello talk about how tour guides regularly insult the memory of Thomas Jefferson by ridiculing his contributions. This is not why people go to these places. We all know that these were slaveholders. For goodness sakes, I learned that in the eighth grade from my teacher, Mrs. Yates, back in the 1950s. This is not a secret, but we've come to terms with it. We fought a civil war over slavery. Fortunately, the right side won. We can certainly teach about the fact that these men were slaveholders, but more important than that is their lasting legacy of accomplishment and contribution to the end of slavery and to the establishment of a great democratic republic.
Right. I mean, the 13th Amendment happened because the Constitution could be amended. And the Constitution
That's exactly
is
right.
what James Madison is the father of, I mean, or well, among many other men, but I mean, he's the one that stands out. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing that it really bothers me when this woke attitude, I guess they want to put us on the right side of history, Bill, but you know,
well,
the right side of history better be correct or at least understood, because otherwise all you're doing is poisoning these young people. And then they wonder why they don't want to go in the Army. Now, I think the Army situation is a little bit different. I think, I'd like to hear your thoughts about this, but I think what happens a lot in the Army is a lot of these young men come from the South. Young
Yes.
white men from the South, I know they're a big part of the Army, and they don't want to hear this crap. I mean, why should they hear it, Bill?
You're quite right, and the military has made greater gains in racial integration than any other institution in American society. I mean, even the people who come from the South, they have accepted it. And there was opposition when President Truman, in I believe the year was 1950, integrated the armed forces formally. There had been some informal integration, but he formally integrated by eliminating race as a factor. And there was some opposition. There was some people dragged their feet, but they made it work. And they made it work very well. I mean, we have now had senior African-American military officers, generals, commanding men in combat, and nobody objects. They all just want to know how good is that person.
Right.
And to just do what they're doing. As I said, this began under the Obama administration. We saw some very strange appointments to the Department of Defense, people with long left-wing histories. And you wondered why they even want to work there.
Right.
I mean, usually people on the left have no interest in the military. Well, their interest or their assigned interest was to change the military. You know, Obama came in saying he wanted to fundamentally change America, and people didn't take him seriously enough. The effect is being felt right now. And I mean, at West Point, they teach critical race theory. I'm sure that the cadets hate it because these are fine young men and women. They're not practicing racism. But I think the drop-off in interest in recruiting can be catastrophic to us because a modern force rides on technology, and you have to recruit very good people to operate that technology. And they are – all the forces apparently are below their recruiting targets. Now, the question is what the administration will do about it, if anything. The Secretary of Defense is a former four-star general. He certainly cares. And he is also an African-American. But they have got to stop this critical race theory stuff and these theories. We now find there is also a backlash building in civilian universities. that mm-hmm. people are just getting tired of just being harassed and harangued. And then you find that this man, Kendi from Boston University, fetches $40,000 an hour for a speech. $40,000 an hour. He's making a fortune on this stuff. He's one of the people who invented it. Has it improved the lot of any African-American child? I don't think so. It seems to be a business. You know,
right.
It was Eric Hoffa, the longshoreman philosopher of the 1950s, who, and this is something John McCain used to quote, who said that all causes become businesses, then they become rackets. I'm
right.
afraid the great civil rights movement of Dr. King has turned into a racket. And
right.
I think more and more people are seeing it.
Right. I think, you know, we've gone from judge my children on the basis of their character to everything is about race, which
well, that's
is,
right.
But here's interesting. Here's an interesting thing, though, Bill, that now you brought this up. Rui Teixeira has just done some analysis, and he's comparing Hispanics, he's comparing Hispanic attitudes with, let's say, Democrat leadership attitudes. And on one of the questions, the whole point was that many Hispanic, you know, liberals think that racism is built in, systematic, as they like to say. But yet the Hispanics, by large numbers, believe that it's more of an individual thing, that you know, you're not born racist, that you become, you know, that you don't have, it's not systematic, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And they say that's one of the reasons why the Hispanics are breaking off from the Democrat Party, that this woke thing happening in the Democrat Party
yes.
is turning off a lot of Hispanics, whether it's attitudes about race or whether it's attitude about transgenders. Now they want to put this young man, Leo Thomas, whatever his name is,
Leah.
They want to put this person, I guess, nominate this person as the female athlete of the year. Well,
yes,
that's an insult to a lot of people.
Oh, have you ever seen a photograph of this individual with
yes.
Female athletes? This individual towers above them. I mean, it's so unfair to young women. This is not what women's sports are about. And by the way, the silence of the women's movement on this indicates what the women's movement has actually become.
That's right.
It's just become a left-wing movement. They don't care about women. But
right.
I have no problem at all. If somebody is a trans individual, they should have the same rights as anybody else. But that there is no right to participate on a sports team if you are physically unqualified. And I think most Americans, most fair-minded Americans say, by all means, trans people should participate in sports, but not in direct competition with women, because these trans athletes have the bodies of men. They have three times more upper body strength, that there must be some way in which the trans athlete can participate, possibly in a separate league or a separate category. We do it in boxing with weight categories. You know, you have to compete within your weight category. Maybe they could do that. But they cannot continue with this. This is just unfair to young girls. Some of these young girls, many of them minorities, have worked for years to build themselves up and become expert at their sport, to win scholarships, to advance themselves and better themselves. It's not fair to them.
No, it's not at all. And it's killing a lot of women's sports. And to nominate this person as a female athlete of the year is as crazy as saying that a man can get pregnant. But apparently some of the recent appointments from the Biden administration feel that way, Bill.
Well, the Biden administration, as we have found out in some recent journalism, is made up of a lot of amateurs. We pointed out that the president does not have around him economic advisors who actually run a business or handle a payroll. It's all these theoreticians, and I think a lot of them are people he didn't really know when he came into office as president, and he depended on the advice of others. The State Department seems to have a lot of people at the assistant secretary level whose first instinct in any situation is to order a surrender or to tell how terrible we are and look at the terrible things we're doing around the world. This is, again, something that started under Obama. It has the full support of much of the American press, And let's point out the recent polls showing that support for the press, belief in the press, confidence in the press, is at the lowest level it has ever been. And that is something we should really be concerned about as a country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because if you cannot believe the media, and people are not believing the media, they're tuning out the media. They're not even watching the news. Now, maybe the local news still has a following because, like you were saying before, people like to watch the weather and the local sports. But the national media is clearly losing out. But I've noticed one thing, Bill, speaking of President Biden, that everybody seems to be turning on President Biden. First it was the independents. He's lost the independents. Then it was Democrats slowly, you know, now they're talking about somebody else in 2024. And now the news media, more and more people in the news media are turning against him. You know, it's like, gee, I wish they had only done their homework in 2020 and had they forced him to do a few press conferences. I think the American people in the fall of 2020 would have seen what we're seeing now, Bill.
Well, you're absolutely correct. But remember, he basically didn't come outside. He lived in his basement and occasionally would make a statement. And they were hoping, essentially, to run what did they used to call it? Porch step campaign, and hoping that enough people didn't like Donald Trump that they would vote for him. And that turned out to be correct, I think, in terms of its analysis. But it did not do the country a bit of good. And we did not hear anything, really, from the vice presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, who has turned out to be a terrible vice president. Now, how can you be a terrible vice president?
Right, how can you
be terrible at an office that doesn't require anything? I mean, but she's managed to do it, you know? And I think that somebody said it best. I don't recall who it was, who said that she is his life insurance policy. There'd be a lot of pressure on him to resign if we had a vice president who we could trust. But who could trust Kamala Harris?
Not at this moment. I mean, you're exactly right. She's probably the reason why they wouldn't apply the 25th Amendment at the moment. I think she has to sign off on the 25th Amendment, if I understand the amendment correctly, or the vice president is one of the people who was actually involved in that decision. Now, of course, it's never been tried before. It's never been tried, as you know, Bill. And well, it has been in place for like a day or two when the president has been, you know, has been in an operation like President Reagan was that time, I think President Bush also, but it's never actually been tried because I think the idea of the 25th Amendment was if you had a guy that was completely incapacitated, but that's not the case here. He's not totally incapacitated. He's just too old to be president, which is a totally different thing, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely true. Now, we ought to point out that a sitting president has remarkable staying power. There are ways of removing a sitting president. The most important and the one that gets all the gab is through impeachment and removal. It has never happened. We've had impeachments, but we've never had a president removed in all the years of this republic. Now, the 25th Amendment was inserted or added to the Constitution by constitutional amendment to provide for a situation where the president was incapacitated. As you point out, it has never been applied as a means of removing or replacing the president. It has been applied several times, as you also pointed out, in the case where the president was being operated on or was going to be incapacitated for a few days in an anticipated medical procedure. But that's it. The third way of removing a president is to put pressure on him that is unbearable to resign. And, of course, that's what happened with Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon resigned. It wasn't his idea. Basically, they came to him and said, you have no political support left. I don't recall if the impeachment resolutions against Nixon advanced to the stage where they passed, but the leaders told him that you will be impeached and you have a good chance of being removed. Why don't you save yourself the trouble and the agony and resign now? And he did. He said he didn't want to put the country through it, and I think he meant it, and he resigned. But we are in a situation now where we have a president who clearly is old and enfeebled to a certain degree. That's not a medical opinion. I can't make medical opinions, but I don't have to. As a citizen, I have the right to look at a television screen and say, I no longer have confidence in that man, and I don't think he should be president. And that's right. Good enough in a democracy. But say, look who we'll be getting. We'll be getting Kamala Harris. And if she's forced out, we'll be getting Nancy Pelosi.
Right, right.
And I think most people want a president who's under the age of 100. I think they would like that. They want a president who grew up with transistors rather than tubes, and with automatic transmissions. And they want a president they can have confidence in. The economy is faltering badly. His trip to the Middle East. Look, I rooted for him. I wanted him to succeed. He's my president.
Sure.
It did not go all that. It did not go no. all that well. The Saudis treated him terribly,
right.
And basically accused him of lying. It went reasonably well in Israel, although the Israelis made clear that they felt his Iran policy was a catastrophe. And I don't think we got anything out of it. He went
no.
to the Middle East in part to get the Saudis to pump more oil. And they basically told them, we're pumping as much as we can. I don't
right.
know if that's true, but it's obvious they don't want to pump anymore. You know, in a situation like this, they have us. We don't have them. And this was all caused by one Joseph Biden on the first
right.
day in office when he went to war against the energy companies. It has been an absolute catastrophe. It can be corrected, but he doesn't want to correct it because he is in league or subject to the pressure by the extreme environmental wing of the Democratic Party, and they apparently have veto power over him.
Well, they got something on him, Bill, and this is something that you and I have speculated before. Let me take a little break because I want to talk a little bit more about this on the other side and also about Dr. Burke. So let me take a little break. We're going to come back with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, right after we hear from one of our sponsors. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. 106 as I'm looking at my computer this Monday afternoon. It's supposed to be like this all week, so it's what we call summer. Bill, we call it summer in Texas. Actually, this is not something new in 2022. We had a summer like this in 2011 and 2000 or 1990. I remember 1988 was a very hot summer, 1980. So we've had a few of these things over the last 40 or 50 years. So to blame it on global warming is probably convenient, but not really the truth, because we've had many summers like this before, Bill.
Yes. Oh, look, I remember when I lived in New York City, walking down Central Park West once and looking up at the thermometer aboard the Central Park West on its southern end is Central Park South, and there's a hotel called the Essex House, and they used to have, I don't know if they have it now, a huge thermometer, and it read 104 degrees. And I just remembered saying, oh, my God, I mean, we can't stand this for more. But I remember huge heat waves, even before the days of air conditioning, and they were brutal. I remember stories about people, students from schools who lived in tenements studying on fire escapes because it was too hot to even enter their apartments. So, yes, we've had this before. We've also had blizzards before and snowstorms. All the things that they say are, you know, killing us, we've had before. Well, is there more of it? They say there is, but I'm not sure. And I really wish that one of the news organizations would do a thorough analysis of the whole issue of climate change. What do we know? What don't we know? What should we know before we spend trillions of dollars
right.
on devices? There's my emergency radio going off, my Midland radio in the background, warning of new
storm.
Bad weather.
Yeah, well,
Yes.
Our bad weather
Warning, they're warning.
What are they warning
you
about,
Kamala
Bill?
Harris. Kamala Harris. They're saying she may be in the neighborhood.
Oh, my
no,
goodness.
No, they're not. They're warning about, let's see. Flash flood warning until 6 p.m.
Oh, wow. So I guess they're not going to play baseball. They don't play baseball today anyway. It's the All-Star break. So they're not going to have to rain out a game today. But let me just quickly get back to the point we were making there at the end, Bill, that all of these things are so obvious to anybody watching, the failures of this administration, especially with energy. You know, somebody was joking, why doesn't he come to Texas and tell us to produce more? We'll be happy to. But he goes Saudi Arabia, and you really have to wonder. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm surrounded by a bunch of climate change people. Okay, fine. But you would think that there'd be somebody at that table who would say, hey, folks, we got to turn down this climate change stuff. And because people are paying $4.50 for a gallon of gasoline, and that's doing a heck of a lot more harm than whatever the temperature has gone up in the last 50 years. Seems like there's nobody around him who sort of breaks the bad news to him, Bill.
Well, that's true, and I think he may be overprotected by his wife. It's perfectly obvious from her comments recently that she plays a very large part in his life, and I just wonder if she's keeping him from bad news or whether she edits the news in the morning. And he also, it's interesting to note, he's developed something of a temper in dealing with the press. He snaps at them. I think he's terribly frustrated at what I think he believes is a good record and is not being reported as a good record. And I don't know if he understands what is going on in the average American household. I think he must. He's not a man who comes from wealth. I mean, he came from humble beginnings. His parents were workers. He has got to be understanding what is going on, especially with the cost of fuel. Now, there was a news story earlier that they feel they can get the cost of gasoline down to about $4 before the election, which is, of course, their goal. But the Republicans will counter, if this is your goal, it's a pretty high goal. I mean, when Trump left off, it was something like $2.50. And what people are seeing in their food stores is catastrophic. You go to the food store on a Tuesday and then go on a Friday of the same week, and the prices are entirely different. They keep going up. I've noticed in our supermarket that the so-called specials, the special prices on items, have declined in number dramatically. You know, people would walk around the store looking for the specials and stocking up on things. You don't find it because shelves are empty. Items are not in stock. I just got as we were coming on the air, I got an email from Bed Bath & Beyond, where we do a lot of our shopping. There was an item that was out of stock, and they said, we regret to tell you it is still out of stock. We're working with our suppliers. But a lot of people are getting those messages. We don't have what you want. And at one time, these were stores that prided themselves in having everything. I mean, you went into Bed Bath & Beyond, those stores, those shelves were stocked. And when you went and wanted something, they almost always had it. Now it's a different story. The food stores, I was just saying to my wife yesterday, we should look around for another supermarket. Maybe another supermarket is doing better. But who in the world, how often do you change supermarkets?
Right.
I mean, you usually pick one and you stay with it if you live in the neighborhood. But I think a lot of people are doing that, and I think it's extending into other areas. We find polls showing, for example, an increase in dissatisfaction with public schools. I think it's a growing movement. People want out of the public schools, an increase in dissatisfaction with the quality of police forces, and that was predictable. When you want to defund the police, you're not going to get a very good police department. And as you pointed out earlier in the broadcast, the military services are not getting the recruits that they need,
not only in quantity, but
in quality.
No, and people have to understand that, you know, let's say we had a war and all of a sudden we needed 300,000, 400,000 men to fight a war, We may not be able to do it with a volunteer army, which means we're going to have to start drafting young men, and that could become a real political nightmare. I hate to be the president who has to sign that draft notice, Bill, because that's going to that's going to be very unpopular. But no, it is really interesting. I mean, I just feel, you know, when I look at the president and I see the decisions that he's making, and it seems to me that it's so obvious. Either he doesn't have the right information, he's not capable of understanding the right information. I mean, something is going on, maybe, and I've speculated this before, and maybe this is irresponsible on my part to do this, but maybe these people around him have something on him that they can say, look, we got you here. If you get out of line, you know, this story is going to break tomorrow in the news. I don't know. I'm speculating, maybe irresponsibly so. But I look at this man and I see, it seems like there's so many obvious things he could do to improve his political standing, and yet he's willing to put the country through all of this and his presidency through all of this. I have no idea what's going on. It seems to me like this is a ship in the middle of the ocean that doesn't seem to have a captain, Bill.
I think you're right, and my theory is that the person who is really the spiritual head of this administration is Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people forget that Susan Rice is in the White House. She has an important White House job. Why anybody would want to hire her after the Obama administration, I don't know. I think she probably was forced on him. As well as the other one whose name I immediately forget, who wrote the book on genocide and turned out to be such an awful diplomat. And you look at the Iran nuclear negotiations, they are being headed by the same person who headed those negotiations for Barack Obama. Now, he, by common consent, did not do much of a job for the United States. Why would you want to reappoint him? Well, and that is the Obama influence, and I think he's doing a lot of things that Obama would do. I think Obama had very little regard for the military. He had very little regard for the idea of peace through strength, and I think we're seeing that again. And we are taking terrible risks. We really are, because other countries, not necessarily friendly to the United States, are looking at us right now. And what they see is a confused and increasingly weak United States of America. And that is what encourages people to start wars.
Right. No, you're right. You're right about that. We don't look very strong right now. I bet you there's a lot of people around the world who wish that the guy who used to write all those terrible tweets was back in the White House, because at least people knew where he came from. I mean, you knew with Trump, you knew you didn't have any, there was no gray area with Trump. I'm not saying that he was good at communicating everything, but there was no gray area. You always knew where he stood. And I get the feeling, I get the feeling that when he was talking to people in other countries, like, you know, when he went to Europe that time and told the Germans and everybody, hey, guys, why aren't you paying your share of NATO? Why am I defending you and you don't pay your share? Yeah, a lot of people were insulted by that, but that's what they needed to hear, Bill.
That's exactly right. He wasn't running a popularity contest.
No.
They may not have liked him, but I think there was, on the part of foreign countries, a grudging respect for him, that he was standing up for his United States. And he also made a lot of very good decisions. I mean, he understood the importance of trade treaties to American families, and he did something about it. I think that's why they cheer him at rallies. They feel that he knows them. He may not be of their class financially, but he knows them and understands what the problem is. I mean, you couldn't imagine Donald Trump putting up with the border situation we have now.
No.
It just wouldn't happen.
No, it wouldn't happen. The other thing he understood, Bill, is that the importance of oil, not only for the middle class budget, the middle class family, if you take the oil or the gasoline from $2 to $4, that destroys their budget. I mean, it just completely destroys the family budget.
That's right.
And if you're not energy independent, then you're making people like Putin more strong. And I think he understood that. He understood that. I cannot prove this. I know that it's a theory, but I don't think Putin would have gone into Ukraine under Trump. I just don't see that. I don't think he would have done it. I could be wrong, and maybe it's just a partisan view on my view, on my part, but I just think people felt that there would be consequences with Trump, and they're not seeing that. And this trip to the Middle East, I mean, the idea that the President of the United States is walking around with an empty gas tank saying, hey, can you give
That's
me
right.
some? I mean, that is so embarrassing that it's frightening. I mean, it's absolutely frightening. Well, let me get to another topic. We've got a lot of things to talk about today. By the way, I wanted to say happy birthday, but John Glenn, John Glenn was born on this day in 1921. And I remember John Glenn, so sometimes I wonder, Bill, I wonder what you think about this, but I think had Glenn been a senator from Ohio in a different Democrat party, maybe he would have been elected president, because he certainly had all the qualities, almost John McCain. John McCain type qualities, you know? And,
yes.
But he couldn't get nominated in the party at that time, because he was too conservative,
well,
I guess, for the party.
Yes, and he was an astronaut who actually did things. And in the Democratic Party, that's one of the worst things you can be, is someone who actually does things.
That's
wasn't that what commentators said that a few days ago? They got to get off this stuff and get something done.
Right.
And they, you know, this is a Democratic Party that the thing they hate most of all is anything involving success.
Right.
If you're successful, you must be a criminal. That's actually the way they see the world, that if you're successful, you must have done something criminal. And
right.
If you're a soldier in the United States Army, you are a colonialist, and you're going out to colonize the world. I mean, what we need, it's amazing it isn't discussed. What we need is a new political party to replace
right.
the Democratic Party. We need a center-left party that will be responsible, that will be part of the nation's history, that will demand and insist on high standards. And we don't have one. We don't have
no.
one.
Well, we had it at one time, but we don't have it anymore. Well, let's get to another article that you wrote this week, Bill. It really, really was fascinating to me, and that's about Dr. Birx. Now, everybody remembers her, of course, from the COVID meetings. She was the lady who was always there with Dr. Fauci, who I believe is retiring.
Yes.
He's
going
to be leaving. He's leaving with retiring after the Biden administration. So I thought that was kind of interesting. We wish him well. But Dr. Birx had some amazing remarks, Bill, or I guess she wrote a book, and she wrote some amazing things, and you commented on it about how this pandemic was politicized, Bill. I'd like to – maybe you can develop that a little bit for the listeners today.
I remember Dr. Birx well. She was the one who always wore the most beautiful scarves. I mean, she wanted to look good for that camera. She is distinguished, though she has distinguished history. She has, I think, said that in her book, she said a lot of things, and it's just beginning to come out. She talked about how she now believes that the disease probably came from a lab, but went along with the ridicule of that idea when she was in office to accept the party line of the Democratic Party. That it really could not have originated in a lab. Remember, when people first suggested that this originated in a lab, they were called racists just for saying so. And she apparently also kind of implied that she hid some of her real beliefs because she wanted to advance her worldview, which is not a worldview that comports well with the American system. What the news story said in the Daily Mail was, let me just read you the first three paragraphs or three lines. Former President Donald Trump's advisor believes COVID-19 could have leaked from a Wuhan lab where scientists were working on vaccines for similar viruses. Infectious diseases expert and former presidential COVID advisor Dr. Deborah Birx told the Mail on Sunday that coronavirus came out of the box ready to infect when it emerged in the Chinese city of Wuhan in December 2020. The advisor said most viruses take months or years to become highly infectious to humans. But Dr. Birx said COVID was already more infectious than flu when it first arrived. That is not what we were told
No.
when she was in office. We're not told that it was highly infectious when it arrived. And I think that while she doesn't apparently mention it, my great concern, I wrote it as a comment on the article, was that it was done intentionally. I have no proof of that. I have to stress it. It is only a suggestion that it is something we as a nation must nail down for sure. Because
right.
if this was done intentionally as a form of biological warfare, we know how devastating it was. And yet there does not seem to be much interest at all on the part of what we call the news media to nail this down. Where did it originate? How was it originated? And also, people now see the damage that a virus like this can cause, and that doesn't only mean the United States sees it, but Russia sees it, China sees it, enemies see it, Iran sees it, and it may give some people some very dangerous ideas.
Yes, I think there's something else too, Bill, that is, after reading your comments also, that I was thinking that, you know, I always had my doubts about the timing of this virus. It comes out in the spring of 2020 when all of the polls are indicating that the economy is going to reelect Donald Trump and that, you know, things are not looking really good for the Democrat Party in the spring of 2020, not suggesting that Trump would have won a landslide, but he would have been easily reelected with that economy. And then all of a sudden this pandemic. And, you know, Trump cannot manage the pandemic. Everything he does is a mistake. He's ridiculed about everything he says. I mean, the guy can do no right. The media is just obsessed with every little thing about the pandemic. Even when he points out that there were some vaccines that would be coming out, automatically all Democrats are saying, well, I'm not going to take the vaccine that Donald Trump came up with. And all this politicization, I should say, of the pandemic. Yeah, and I'm sitting there saying, you know, I was skeptical about it all. I mean, it's not that I didn't believe the pandemic. I mean, I wore the mask and took care of myself for a while. But there was a political factor to all of this, and we need to get to the bottom of that as well, Bill, because I think if the media wants to understand why more and more people don't trust him, maybe they should go back to two things, Bill, how they covered the pandemic and how they covered the election, Bill. Allowing one guy to hide in the basement of his house, and every time the other guy was out, the media was like crazy out to kill him, Bill.
Well, that's exactly right, and that is one of the reasons that the media is so poorly regarded in America, and that's dangerous. You know, we depend on a free press for our information. They constantly tell us how important they are. We are your guardians. We are your protectors. We are the eyes and ears of the public. I always fear when they say things like that, and they do it all the time on CNN, I always like to ask them through my television set, when was that election held? When were you elected as our protector?
Right.
You know, they are employees of commercial organizations making, in many cases, enormous amounts of money to read a teleprompter. And,
right, right.
I don't see them as protecting anything except their own jobs. But the behavior of the press, I think, has really now alienated most Americans. I don't know, however, if it's going to affect the election result. There are some people who feel, look, it's got to be worth a certain number of points for the Democrats. I'm afraid I happen to agree with that. And that's what the sin is here, that it does elect, in some cases, in some elections, it does have an effect. But we need a much better press to lead us through hard times, if there are going to be hard times, to lead us through military action. My goodness, if we had to go to war tomorrow and the American people didn't believe the press reports, we would really be in some fix.
Absolutely. No, I think you're exactly right. I mean, and right now this is not a media that people believe in any way whatsoever. But I always felt, and this may be the unintended consequence of her book, is that I always felt that the pandemic was real. I never doubted, because I know people who had it, and it was real. It was real. It was the pandemic itself was not fake, but I always felt the coverage was exaggerated against Trump. And you saw these reporters asking Trump questions, and there was always a, let's get you type of attitude. And, well, I think they didn't help the country doing that, Bill.
No, I think they did a great disservice to the country. And they did a great disservice to the cause of peace because they weakened us as a nation. And it hasn't changed. They have not changed one bit. They don't regard anything they did as wrong. I think organizations like the New York Times now see themselves not as as newspapers, but as new country papers, trying to create a new society, and they see that as their main objective and their main responsibility, not covering the news.
Yeah. Well, the only good news about it all is that they're losing viewers and losing readers. So eventually, at some point, they're going to have to make some economic decisions because if I know anything about business, if you lose customers, eventually you won't have a business. One quick thing here at the end, Bill. We got a couple of minutes, and I just wanted to take you back, if I could, to this week in 1969, July 18th. Two huge stories: Apollo 11 on the way to the moon, and Chappaquiddick. At the same time, Bill, that must have been. I don't. Were you in the newspaper business at that moment in 69?
Yes, I was at the New York Times.
Okay, so you must remember.
The flight to the moon. I edited the New York Times Magazine's stories on that, and it was, of course, an incredible event. It was the first time in human history where we were to visit another planet, where actual human beings were to visit another planet. And I remember when the Times came out with its edition, the headline was "Man Walks on Moon." And I have it. I have it right in my drawer. I will always keep it. An incredible event, and we were there to see it. And, yes, that week was the week of Chappaquiddick, where everybody believed that Ted Kennedy's career was over because he ran away from the scene of the accident. But he endured. He apologized for his behavior, and he went on and became a senior United States Senator and ran for president in 1980, wanted the Democratic nomination. So it ironically didn't hurt him that much, and I thought it was terrible that it didn't, because his behavior was terrible.
Right.
It really was.
One headline was, Bill, "Man Walks on the Moon." The other headline would have been, "Man Cannot Swim in Chappaquiddick," or something.
Right.
Because... you know, and that was all before cable and internet. I mean, can you imagine stories like that today, Bill? It would be crazy.
Oh, they would be magnified. That was 1969. We didn't even have cable television.
Right.
We had the channels, over-the-air channels that we had in the cities and antennas on people's roofs. In New York, we had New York had more channels than any other city, and I think it was only about seven. We did not have the speed with which news could be reported as it is today. many people still had black and white television sets, and that was it. We also had an entire generation from World War II that was still alive, millions and millions of people, and they provided a stability that we didn't realize at the time was so important to the country, because this was the late 60s. The campuses were already erupting. Our popular culture was taking a nosedive in quality. It was a tumultuous time. I remember when the end of the year occurred, December 31st, saying to my wife, "Am I glad this decade is over?" We didn't realize that what was coming was just as tumultuous.
Right. Well, 6 weeks after man landed on the moon, they had Woodstock, which I thought was pretty crazy too. But I just think it's fascinating to have two events like that in one day, and it must have been what a time to have been a newspaper reporter. What I remember about Apollo 11 was watching it on TV with my parents and just hearing my parents over and over saying, "Oh my God, I would have, who would have believed this?" And my parents were like, because they came from the generation where they had, they used to read comics about going to the moon, right? And now all of a sudden there's a man on the moon. I guess for me and my brother and sister, it was big, but for them it was like something they couldn't believe. that a man was walking on the moon. I bet my parents' attitudes
were like
a lot of others, Bill.
That's right. And some people actually doubted it. Yes, we grew up at a time when that was considered science fiction. There was, Hollywood made a movie called Destination Moon, very popular movie. And the big space hero of American fiction was an individual named Buck Rogers. There was a radio program that began the radio program that began Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Dun, 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 dun. And that was that was the way we saw the world.
That's right. No, you're right. And my father used to say that, you know, they had these comics. I mean, they were the American comics, but translated to Spanish, that they used to read in Cuba about going to the moon. And for him, the idea of going to the moon was like, well, like you say, science fiction. Well, Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. It's always a lot of fun. We'll keep an eye on Urgent Agenda. I'm really interested in the Dr. Burke story. I just feel like there's going to be more to that, Bill, than we've heard so far. I'll keep an eye on that. I'll keep an eye on your comments on that as well, Bill.
Thank you. We'll talk again next week, Sylvia.
We'll talk again next week. Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, our weekly conversation with Bill. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you later.